Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
After a long and successful run as an independent team, Rock Island's football franchise would help form the future of pro football, the National Football League. We have their journey and more in this part two of the Rock Island Independence. Their story's coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And as we do at the beginning of every week, we talk about those early professional football teams. Try to get a little bit of detail on these great teams that played in the early days that helped make the NFL and all of pro football what it is today. And last week, we started a segment on the Rock Island Independents. And this week, we're going to continue on that. That same team, the Rock Island Independents, and they're playing in the APFA NFL days. Now, the team was playing some of the top teams in the Midwest and Ohio Valley when we last left off in 1919 and was very competitive. Again, we'll reference that brilliant and well-done website of the rockislandindependents.com where we get so much inspiration and information from. And when we left off in part one, you remember, the Independents had challenged the Canton Bulldogs, who were considered the top team of the mythical Ohio League, a challenge to play a title game at the season's end of the 1919 campaign. Now, Jim Thorpe, the player coach of the Canton 11, ended up declining the offer. And despite the rejection by the Bulldogs, the Rock Island team's owner, Walter Flanagan, if you remember him, ever being the great promoter of his team, claimed that the Independents were the champions of the USA. Per a PFRA Coffin Corner article by Bob Carroll and Bob Bronwart back a few decades ago. Well, the popularity and contact with the big pro teams of the era, such as Canton, and playing some of the games that they did against some of the other future APFA teams, gained them an invitation to join a group of franchises that would make professional football history when they would organize into the precursor of the NFL, the American Professional Football Association. And even though Canton owner Ralph Hay and his Bulldog team did not play Rock Island that year in 1919, they did take note. In 1920, they came time to gather the best teams in the country to form a professional football league. Flanagan and the Independents were invited to that party. Yes, the Independents were indeed one of the 11 teams represented in Hay's Hubmobile showroom on that famous day of September 17, 1920, along with Canton, Maslin, Dayton, Akron, Hammond, Rochester, Muncie, Decatur, the Chicago Cardinals, and Cleveland franchises. Now, Flanagan, in fact, helped shape the formation of the league that would eventually be called the NFL at this meeting, alongside the likes of Thor, Palace, Lions, Stork, and others, those founding fathers of really the grassroots of the main professional football league, the NFL. In fact, the first game involving an APFA team took place 9 days after that meeting on September 26, 1920 at Douglas Park in Rock Island, Illinois, as the hometown Independents flattened the St. Paul Ideals, who were not part of the APFA, 48-0. Now, that was the first game that an APFA team was involved in, was that September 26 game. The Independents were that team. And the Independents have that historic mark in history as being the first league team to play under the new banner of the APFA. Well, they also may have a record of something else for APFA teams playing. The public relations of Flanagan and his Rock Island Machine were pumping hard to get the fans in the stadium. So they did a little bit of promotional type items between that September 17th meeting and that game on September 26th. Now, the Rock Island Argus newspaper posted an ad on September 18th, 1920, that folks could see the new uniforms in a local store window the day after the new APFA formed in Ohio, with Rock Island being that one of those charter members. So window display showing what the guys were going to be wearing that season. Now, the team added a future Pro Football Hall of Fame player, coach, and Jimmy Konzelman, who was a player at first to the roster in 1920 and the 1921 seasons. Now, a week after the Rock Island 11 dispatched St. Paul on October 3rd, 1920, the Independents defeated the Muncie Flyers 45-0 at Douglas Park in the first fully scheduled week of the American Professional Football Association play. Now, there were over 3,100 fans in attendance as Arnie Wyman, the Minnesota Golden Gopher great, former great, made his debut for the Islanders, scoring three touchdowns in that one game in that 45-0 blanking of Muncie. Now, this could have been possibly the first NFL game ever played between two NFL league teams. However, the NFL historical records don't indicate the kickoff time for this game or another APF game that same day that was played between the Dayton Triangles and the Columbus Panhandles in Dayton, Ohio. So it's unclear which game started or finished first. Now, we've talked about this before. We've talked, you know, with Bruce Smith, our friend that has the Dayton Triangles podcast. Now, he seems to believe and wants folks to be, he's in Dayton's corner, wants to say that Dayton Triangles Columbus Panhandles game was first. It started first. Also, Chris Willis, who wrote the great book on the Panhandles, and on Joe Carr, who was the leader of that Panhandles team back then, and hails from Columbus, believes that that Bruce Smith is right. The Dayton Triangles and Columbus Panhandles in Dayton was the first game. So it's unclear by the historic records, but those are two experts that believe that Dayton and Columbus played first. But I guess people in the Isle of Rock Island want you to believe that it was the Rock Island game was played first that day. But who knows? We'll probably never have an answer on that. Now, despite these two early season shutouts, the Independents finished with a modest 4-2-1 record in league play. They actually posted the same record the next two seasons after that as well, losing five of their six games in the first three APFA NFL seasons to George Halas teams. Halas's Decatur Staleys of the 1920 season became the Chicago Staleys in 1921, and then more recognizable Chicago Bears in 1922. So only six losses in the first 3 years for the Independents, five of them against Halas's teams. Now, the 1921 season had an important storied highlight to it. On October 16th, 1921, we've talked about this before, the Independents were down by a score early in a game with the Chicago Cardinals. Now, the Rock Island, they battled their way back into the lead, the Cardinals, by 14-7 by the end of the second quarter. The comeback was sparked by two touchdowns scored by that star they picked up earlier, Jimmy Konzelman. And it's a bit unclear if the plays have been called or designed by the then player coach Frank Coughlin, who started the game as a player coach. However, for some unknown reason, Walter Flanagan, the owner, soon thereafter assigned the team's tackle, Ed Healy, to go in and substitute for Coughlin. And almost as soon as Coughlin was headed towards the sideline, Healy, in the huddle, gave a handwritten message to Jimmy Konzelman from Flanagan. And it read, quote, "Coughlin was fired. The new coach was Konzelman," end quote. Now, this act marked the first and only time an owner has fired and hired a new coach in the middle of a game. Still an unbelievable story. Now, following the 1922 season, Flanagan sold the contract of Ed Healy to Halas postscript. And remember, Healy is the one that brought the note into the Konzelman in the huddle. And the Chicago Bears for $200. Now, it was a great investment for Halas, as Healy soon became a star for the Bears and would later be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1964. So Mr. Halas got the better end of that deal, I believe. In 1923, Flanagan ended up leaving the team to concentrate on his businesses of real estate and insurance. And Dale Johnson, another local businessman, took over as the team's owner, and the team's backup quarterback, Vince McCarthy, started acting as the manager of the squad. Now, Rock Island went 2-3-3 that season. However, they did not post winning seasons in 1924 or 1925. Well, they did post winning seasons 1924 and 25 with the help of some real rock stars of the game in that era of the gridiron. Jim Thorpe, considered the world's greatest athlete, joined the Independents in 1924, and the team went 5-2-2 in league play. And after the 1925 season, they toured nationally to promote pro football. Often, sometimes, they didn't even use the Rock Island moniker. They were called themselves the Tampa Cardinals at times. So very interesting there. Now, the franchise made a huge move before the next season, though. After the 1925 season, Johnson moved the team to the fledgling rival American Football League, the first AFL. If you remember, C.C. Pyle and Red Grange, his player, C.C. Pyle was the manager, convinced Johnson that the American Football League, which would feature Red Grange, would outperform the NFL. Now, if you remember, 1925 was that first year that Red Grange made the jump right after Thanksgiving. He played for Illinois, his college, right before that, played his final game. 4 days later, Hal assigned him to the Bears. They went on a whirlwind barnstorming tour across the country, probably really put the NFL on the map, as everybody wanted to come see Red Grange play with the Chicago Bears. Helped franchises like the New York Giants, have like 70,000 plus in the stadium at the Polo Grounds, and help save that franchise from having financial difficulty. Did a lot for it, and C.C. Pyle thought that Red Grange should be making a lot more money. The Bears didn't agree. The NFL would not let C.C. Pyle and Red Grange start their own franchise near the New York City area, where Grange was so popular, and because of the Giants holding the rights there. So Grange and Pyle decided to do the next best thing, start their own league, and they ended up talking Dale Johnson, the owner of the Rock Island Independents, to join their new American Football League. So the Independents then signed Elmer Layden, who, if you remember right, was one of the four horsemen of Notre Dame, for the 1926 season they signed him. They also switched home field stadiums that year from Douglas Park in Rock Island to Browning Field in nearby Moline, Illinois, for the 26 season. And the Independents were the only NFL team that made the jump to the rival league, and it may have just been their death blow, because after the 1926 season, the Independents folded along with the entire American Football League in 1927. Now, some of those players departed from those teams of the AFL, and even Grange, who ended up returning to play in Chicago, and some of the Rock Island folks, I'm sure, left and went to go play elsewhere in the NFL as well, or maybe some of the other professional independent teams around the country. So that is the story of the Rock Island Independents. It's a very short story, but does have some highlights. They did play some big teams and had some big-time players on their roster. Very interesting story when it helped shape the NFL and all of professional football. So thank you for joining us for this little bit of a history look back, back in the early 1920s and late teens and the Rock Island Independents. I hope you'll join us each and every day for some more great football history. Till tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day. That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that, Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.